It's Saturday, September 29th, 2012, and you're listening to episode 278 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 57 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name's Julia.
My name is Perk.
And my name is Chris.
It had to be done.
Bruno has no idea what we're referring to. I'll link it in the show notes. Fair warning, it's somewhat offensive, but nonetheless, I'll link it in the show notes.
I don't.
Hey, hi, Julia. By the way, my name is Chris. You and I actually have not met on the mics here yet. So, how you doing?
We haven't.
No, we haven't.
I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing just
fine.
Do you
need it? Fear the Con?
I briefly met him at Fear the Con.
Yes.
He was the old ass man.
He's the one that was running awesome games.
I think I'm the youngest.
Youngest really? Man?
Well, yes.
There were not toddlers too. There.
Well, not there. Yeah. Of us, though.
So last episode, we talked about pitching games. Where we left it, as we kind of gave these concepts on how to pitch a game, but we didn't actually apply them. So while this is not what I need to talk about all episode, I want to lead this episode off with doing some game pitches as if we were all sitting down about to game and each of us as a game master was trying to pitch a game idea and really sell the other people on it. What we'll do is we'll do these and then critique them kind of as a way of not just pontificating about something, but actually applying our own ideas and advice. So, Chris, let's go ahead and do something really weird here and let you talk.
Say what?
What show is this?
Clearly, I am on the wrong podcast.
Well, you know what? I figure we might as well start with you just so we can go and dismiss those ideas and move on.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. So, sure. Get rid of the dross first. Is that basically how is what you're thinking?
Right, exactly.
Excellent.
So why don't you go ahead and start?
All right, I will start. And going off of what I said last time, last episode is about as far as how I would approach things and make it more of, rather than just say, here's my idea, here's what I'm thinking of, I would actually build more of a presentation sort of thing. So the way we'll do this here is I'm going to essentially give you a handout with some little preface scripting on there, and then I'm going to ask each one of you an individual question in regards to what you just heard and then read what the response would be.
I'm going to stop you right there.
I knew you were going to say that. I'm sitting here. I'm going through my monologue. I'm like, I'm counting down in my head. Dan's going to say he's going to stop me here in about 5, 4. Go ahead. What's up?
Okay. If you've got me all figured out, then what am I about to say?
Oh, I have no idea what you're about to say. I just know that cannot ever be predicted. But what can be predicted is when you'll stop me. But go ahead.
Okay. Do the pitch.
Yeah.
Then let's deconstruct it. Because I had the same struggle myself. I thought about all these ways that I was going to set up the pitch or preface it or whatever. And all of them, quite frankly, in the end, really sounded like either A, pleading, or B, if not pleading.
Please play my game.
Or if not pleading, it's like people would start to get hung up on the preface as opposed to allowing their mind to freely interpret the pitch. So what I'm going to say is feel free to deconstruct why you're doing it this way. But do the pitch, then deconstruct it.
Okay. So I'll back it up, and then we'll start over again. Back it up.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there just to tell you to go ahead.
Oh, thank you. You're going to tell me to go ahead now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So
now, hold up.
Wait 1 second. All right. So I've got a brief pitch,
nozzle.
And then I'm going to ask each of you a question, and then I'm going to read the response to that question. Now, if we were all actually sitting around a table and not recording this in the mics, what I would read in response to your individual questions, only you would hear. But because of the nature of what we're doing, it's not going to be that way.
Okay.
So, here we go. The name of the campaign is called Children of Heroes. Whether it's sci-fi, whether it's fantasy, we can all figure that out later. That is immaterial. But here's the base pitch. And forgive me while I read you a little bit of box text, as I am a fan of box text. It's a bright autumn morning when a courier arrives and seeks you out. It has taken me some time to find you, but I have been asked to deliver this message to you and to only you. He extends you a coiled piece of paper wrapped with a red ribbon. Taking it, you unroll the piece as the courier leaves. The note inside briefly reads as follows. I extend you the most humblest of greetings. You do not know me, but I knew your parents. Of course, I know that many can make that claim, some with honor and honesty, and others with ill thoughts. I can assure you, though, that my intentions are most honorable. Many years ago, this world was saved by the actions of your parents, earning them great fame, renown, and honor in the eyes of many. For some time, the world benefited from their actions, but like a spoiled child that refuses to clean their room, we seem to have fallen astray from the lessons taught by those who taught you, and now we need their help once again. Sadly, I know that they are unable to extend their heroics toward us once again, so we turn our eyes to you. Will you rise up to take the role your parents so eagerly took many years ago? So now, Dan, I'm going to ask you, do you want to do this for love, honor, money, glory, or knowledge?
What if my answer is I want to wait for now and do nothing out of spite?
If you want to do nothing out of spite, then I'll go out. Chad, same question.
Honor.
Honor. Chad picks honor. Your parents made a great sacrifice in their efforts to help us in the past, and we implore you to answer that great call for legacy. We understand how important it is for you to honor your family name. Aiding us in this, our great time of need, would be an honor to us and the legacy left by your parents. All right, Julia, which one? You got love, you got knowledge, you got money, and glory.
Love.
Julia chooses love. We know that you share the same kind heart and benevolence that your parents showed us back then. We hope that your love of us in this world is as good and pure as theirs. Please, save us once again and show us the way. Pat?
Benjamins.
You got honor, money. All right, money. The Benjamin's all about the Pentiums, baby. If you fear that we are asking this simply as a favor that would go unrewarded, please do not think of us in such a manner. You will be well compensated for your efforts, for we know what is truly important to you. We merely seek your help in this, our time of trouble.
Bitches.
No,
I didn't,
said
I didn't
money.
Make a bitches option, but I suppose we could make a bitches option.
Money to get the bitches. So first money comes, gets the bitches.
First
well
comes
known.
The paper, then comes...
exactly.
Dan, I don't have a spite one. Do you have...
Nose candy.
You know what? And if you, and honestly, if you don't want to pick, don't pick. I wouldn't make you pick the options. Because I think that actually that would be kind of cool to try and then figure that out. And if you notice, everything is very vague here. And that, of course, is intentional. Because then I want input then from you guys to help try and build all of these angles. Because really what's important here is now that you've made this choice, we can start looking at maybe, you know, directions and arcs that we'd want to take for each individual character as you go through whatever the plot ends up being.
Well, that was going to be my two questions. Question one is, what if I pick something that's not on your list? For example, when I read that, when you first emailed it out, mm-hmm. the first thought that occurred to me was spite. And it was spite for two reasons. One,
you're a spiteful person.
Well, yeah, mm-hmm. that's reason zero. That's just a
reason. That's the baseline.
That's the baseline
that we build off of.
I mean, human being on a podcast. I mean, these are just kind of presupposed truths.
Yes.
But it's first off, I chose spite because it's like, one, I'm living in the shadow of my parents, which I think is going to, for a lot of children, raise them with kind of a chip on their shoulder. I want to be more than my father's son. I want to be my own person. And secondly, even if my parents are admirable people and they did all this and now the world has basically crapped all over it, apparently they didn't get the lesson. And so maybe perhaps one of the things that mom and dad failed at, and I think once again, being a child is somewhat resentful, I'm going to be looking for places they failed. Maybe one of them is they didn't let people understand the consequences of what they were doing or not doing. And so my motivation would be to teach a lesson my parents failed to teach. But my very first immediate response would be one of spite. It's you created this, you deal with it. And once you have fallen flat on your face, then I will come in and I will do it right. Because apparently mom and dad didn't.
And I absolutely love that. And if you think about that as if that was your approach, and we'd look at the other approaches that everybody else took, we have built some built-in conflicts that are going to show up down the road, which is awesome, which would be exactly what we talked about last episode. What do you want out of it? As opposed to one of the players. And that would be something I would want out of it. I'd want to see some of these conflicts show up as you're all going about the same goal, but from these different motivations, which I think would be fun and fascinating to take a look at and see how that would all work. So I love that. I love that.
So here's my second question. What's the game? What am I playing? Well, what's the setting? What is it that mom and dad did that I'm trying to redo or undo?
Here's my issue with the exercise. That was cool. This is a cool exercise. It's not a pitch.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that would be something that I would do once I got everybody on board with playing the game in the first place. So like when we sit down to make characters, maybe.
Yeah. See, yeah, exactly. Fun idea, cool concept. I like what you did. Very creative. And to me, that is something that you would do after the pitch has been successful and everybody's on board.
So yeah, Chris, let's say that we had just for a moment, just I guess I'll throw an exercise back at you. Let's say we had set this up as you said, okay, we are playing Star Trek. Your parents, I'm drawing from Voyager here, forgive me for that, but your parents,
I like Voyager, so go for it,
were trailing the Borg and figured out some way of slowing down their advance. Now the messenger shows up. So now I kind of have some context on what it is I'm playing, what it is my parents did, what the context of this is. You know, it's both the good and bad of that. In the way you pitched it, it's a total Rorschach test. It is completely open-ended. But for that reason, I'll agree with Chad that I don't know that I see it as a pitch because I don't understand what it is I'm agreeing or disagreeing with.
Well, see, and that's interesting because when I was thinking about this, and my initial thought was I was coming at this from playing a fantasy game of some sort, whatever the rule system might be. To me, it doesn't really matter. That was my initial coming at it. But then I thought to myself, because I thought about what we had discussed in the last episode, and I thought, if we really want to try and as a group determine what genre to play, then I want to go at it from the tactic of, let me pitch the idea of a campaign, and then let's then flesh out exactly in what type of setting that we want to do this in. So in a certain sense, I was almost doing it in the reverse of what you're saying. And I totally get where you guys are coming from, and I don't necessarily disagree with you either. I just think that this is a different starting point to take.
So let me build off that. Is what you're saying here that this is intended to be a Rorschach test where you give us a situation, we react to it, and then you say, okay, what setting did you picture? What sort of characters did you picture? What is it you think your parents did? Is that what you're doing here of trying to start with kind of a reaction and then build backwards to the game?
In a certain sense, yes, because I'm, in a certain sense, forcing a certain mode of behavior on your character by asking you to make this choice, love, money, honor, glory, or whatever, or spite in your case. Because I'm essentially forcing that character attribute on you, it's not fair for me, I think, to now then try to impose the setting and the genre and all of that crap on you. I would want some feedback so that you can feel some investment in what's going on as well. Because I do feel that there is a certain kind of heavy-handedness to this approach because I am making you choose, but I also like it because it's a little bit different.
Pat, let's hear your pitch. Chris,
oh, I don't have a pitch.
He does a game master.
Yeah, he doesn't.
I just spent 2 weeks on the forums telling everyone to bring a pitch.
Well, I wasn't supposed to be on this cast until, I think, yesterday. I was not one of the hosts for this.
Because John had. Because Wayne couldn't make it. John and
Wayne. Yeah.
Okay, fine. I'll give you a pass.
I do apologize. Right? You're absolutely right. You did post this for 2 weeks, but... That's why I was actually a little surprised when you had me going like, that's cool.
Okay, fine.
He could be a judge.
As a dedicated player, I want to hear judge.
He is the consummate player.
Okay, fine. I will go with what Chris and Chad are saying. Pat?
Okay.
Judge Chris.
Judgment.
I agree with Chad. I like the idea. I like your questions. And I think questions are something we're sort of used to as a group as well. Mm-hmm. We've used this a lot now in the last couple of years, and I think it's a successful way to go about things. The only thing that I would say I didn't really like is that you had a handful of choices, and every time somebody chose one, you took that out. So
what if the entire group chose love?
Right. Yeah. I mean, Julie chose love, why, you know, it could, can I not choose it? Is that how you had it set up or
actually
what?
If this had been a real world setting and we all were sitting on the table, I would have allowed you to choose the same ones if you wanted to. That wouldn't have bothered me. But for the sake of this exercise, I didn't want to do that because I wanted to try and get as many choices out there as possible.
Get different answers. Now, here's another thing. And this is along with what Dan was. I don't necessarily like the choices that you had listed. Would you allow like a write-in or something like that? I mean, is that okay? So
absolutely, because that like Dan's spite approach, that's beautiful, baby. And that's I would totally do that because there's a hell of a lot that you can do with it. You can get a lot of mileage out of that thing.
I feel like I'm talking to a used car salesman.
This baby is beauty. It's ready to go right now. Take it off the lot. Let's go. Let's play. Grab your dice.
What?
All right, Pat, who do you want to go next? Julia, Chad, or me?
Let's hear Dan.
Okay.
Just so everyone in the audience is clear after Chris's total debacle.
After Chris Gate.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't think it was that bad.
Julia, welcome to a show with Chris, by the way.
That's right. Although she's adapted well because she already said, I didn't think it was that bad, indicating it was bad. It just wasn't bad.
No, it just wasn't what I was expecting.
Well, right. That's kind of the idea.
You're expecting a game pitch. That's not exactly what we got.
So we are talking about pitching a game.
Yes.
Not, like, We are trying to sell a game to a group.
Yes.
And we're all just trying to look at like what is effective pitches, what is ineffective pitches. Pat's pitch is totally ineffective of, I got nothing, guys. I didn't come prepared and I wasn't supposed to be here.
We're just going to sit around a table and stare at each other. That's our game.
And Chris's was simply...
You've been to a Pat game.
I would say Chris's...
What's my game? I'm sorry. I'm
sitting around a table staring at each other because you brought nothing.
And roll the dice to see if you have to keep staring.
I have to cut in and just do a slight derailment here. I have played in two sessions Pat has run. The first session was awesome. You sell yourself short when, I mean, you say you don't enjoy game mastering. That's fine. You sell yourself short when you say you're a bad one, because that was an awesome game session. The second one I was in, I'm not going to say it was bad. It wasn't my cup of tea. It was very module sort of puzzles and that sort of thing. Wasn't really my thing, but it was fine. It was good. But your first one was awesome. Awesome.
Thank you.
And Chris, with yours, I really do think that you took an interesting approach, but I don't think it's a bad approach of starting off with kind of an emotional buy-in and then working backwards to a setting and situation. And the traditional pitch is to start with a setting and situation, look for the emotional buy-in, which is how I'm going to pitch mine. But as much as we're making fun of you, I think I'm going to have to digest yours for a little bit, because maybe you're actually kind of onto something of look for that buy-in and then see where people take it. But I think that also presupposes something, which is that the game master doesn't really care what the setting or situation is. That you're open to, well, this could be D&D, this could be Star Trek, this could be Dogs in the Vineyard, this could be whatever. And you're kind of open to this really, you know, it's like a Rorschach test, to use my previous analogy. They don't put the ink blot in front of you and then say, is this A, B, or C? They just say, what do you see here? And you can say anything, and they have to be able to interpret that and run with it.
You know, I wonder if in a real situation where you were actually doing game, you know, pitching around the table, and Chris comes in with this idea, which is really, like you said, Dan, it's taking it the backwards approach of, I'm not giving you a genre or a type of game to play. He's doing a sales pitch, and it's a very good one. And, you know, I think that would grab people's attention, and maybe that would get the votes from around the table. Do you think that'd piss the other people off that did the more traditional way of, my idea is for, you know, fantasy role play, Julia's idea is for sci-fi, Chad's going to do a Chad game, you know, it's very
own genre.
It's set where, but then Chris is like, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. Here's an idea. And then after you pick mine, then we'll decide what we're going to do.
I don't know. It would make me mad. I don't know.
I think the only thing that it would agitate me is, as someone who prefers to GM, if I was in pseudo competition for the GM chair, if Chris said, hey, I'll just run whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
That would kind of feel like.
That's the thing, is that what would probably happen once everybody did their thing and we started talking about genres, I would tell you what I just told you. I initially came at this from a fantasy thing. That's my preferred genre to run. I would prefer to do that. But listen, if you guys want to do this set in space opera, or if you want to do this in a Wild West setting, I'm good with that. Might take a little bit of adjustment here and there. But, you know, I came at this from a fantasy angle, but I decided to remove those trappings to just pitch the idea, and then we could figure out genre later on. You know, so then it would eventually get revealed at the table that this was my preferred setting.
And you know what, as much of an improv GM as I am, and as much as I say, I can run anything, which I can have anything out there. If you've noticed that when I've pitched game ideas, like take Friday, we had a party and I ran an improv, no prep game.
A lot of fun,
everybody.
By the way.
Well, thank you.
Shame of the ocean.
Yeah,
we were a pirate group and the name of our ship was the Shame of the Ocean.
Telling you, the campaign should have been called Booty Call.
Yeah. It should have.
The thing is, I don't pitch games I'm not interested in running.
Yeah.
Like, if you noticed on, you know, the whole listenership of the podcast, if you noticed on Friday, because you were all here for the party, I didn't pitch a cyberpunk game, even though I'm really into cyberpunk. I just wasn't into it that night.
Right. And you weren't in the mood for it.
Yeah. And there was some stuff that I wasn't really interested in running, or a vampire game. But I pitched out a Western, and I pitched out a pirate game, and I pitched out, I guess that's something else. I don't even know what, but.
Well, and I think that's part of it too, is whenever you are trying to pitch a game, I could tell that our group's getting bored with fantasy, so I'd rather do something else. So rather than giving them the choice of going fantasy to that norm, because that's generally what our group is like, we don't know what to play, let's play Pathfinder. I would want to force them to play something different just to get their minds open personally. Again, I'm the same way. I wouldn't oppose doing it the way you're doing it, Chris. I don't know, that's just what I see during character creation. It's probably just because I have never been exposed to anything other than that.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah, it was unusual. And at first I dismissed it, but the more I think about it, I think it was just novel. I don't think it was bad. Mm-hmm. All right, but to keep moving on, Pat asked me to go next, so I'm going to take mine from a much more traditional approach, but I will try not to set it up, and I'll wait.
The traditional approach of, I'm the GM, this is what we are playing.
So shut
Here
up.
Is your character.
Here's your character.
I'm taking the liberty of making your characters.
Like it or GTFO.
I guess we're playing WoW.
It is the far future.
I'm in. Boom, sold me.
In fact, it is so far future that people do not even know what the year is on the Anno Domini calendar. No one could even tell you. Humanity has been spreading across the stars for thousands and thousands of years. The galaxy, pretty much, if it's inhabitable, I realize the galaxy is a huge place, but a lot of it now is taken up by the human race. Humanity has encountered no alien species whatsoever. Now, just as we have a diverse planet, across this galaxy, humanity has become even more diverse. The languages, the cultures, the technology levels, depending on the neighborhood you're in, some areas they may have even been messing with the human genome to the point that humans don't even exactly look human anymore. Or if they were to take a standard genetic test, would not appear to be human anymore. They've gone the transhumanist route. Other places have kept humanity very pure. It's an exceptionally diverse place. Star travel absolutely obviously exists. The form of star travel, whether it's a jump drive or an Alcubierre-type warp drive or whatever, once again, incredibly diverse. Magic exists, but I make no attempt to explain it. Theories abound. Is this actual magic? Is this simply one of the drive types we're using is creating a leak between realities? Is this something where all of our transhumanist experimentation has unlocked something we don't fully grasp? Nobody really knows. All they know is that a very, very small percentage of people are born with an emergent power. And what I mean by an emergent power is that it is based upon a personality trait. So if, for example, if you have an aggressive personality, you will tend towards a certain school of what they're calling, quote unquote, magic, even though they don't really know what it is. In the not that distant past, people abused that power to the detriment of humanity as a whole. And one of the few consolidated things that exists in humanity for all its diversity is because of the fact that that was becoming a threat, not just to one corner of humanity, but to humanity as a whole. A group stepped in and took control of it and created what they called the academies, where basically if you show potential in that form of magic, they pull you in. And if you refuse, or if you are rogue and have never knelt to the academies at all, they have people in stasis, in like a sensory deprivation tank that they call the dreamers, who basically just feel the galaxy's ebb and flow. And when they feel those anomalies, they will release great power to try and either annihilate you or rein you in. Now, the vast majority of the populace is not magical. And in this setting, magic and technology are neither in unison, like in Spelljammer where magic makes ship fly, nor is it in competition or exclusion, like Arcanum or Shadowrun, where the use of technology somehow resists magic and vice versa. It simply is a factor within the reality. Give me a response.
Are these magic-using people, are they... Even though they have the academies, are they discriminated against?
It depends. Once again, humanity being a diverse place, in some places they're welcomed and loved and adored, in other places they're hated. Sometimes it's school by school. They might love or hate a particular school because of what that school stands for. Once again, it's an emergent magic. So if you belong to this school, you are probably a certain type of person. The academy itself is fairly discriminating. You either bow to us or you face a very difficult life on the run.
I like the setup. I think it's a very well-described world setting that you've given me. I'd say the one thing that maybe I would want more of is actually somewhat of a pitch of maybe what you see us starting to do. And maybe that's beyond what you're thinking in the pitching a game, but, you know, I was waiting for you to go...
You're on
how do you envision us? How would you want us to start? Yeah, not a well-defined thing. It doesn't not an absolute, but
right.
Would you have, like, one or two ideas of what you would want to see.
You know, and that is now deconstructing the pitch. Let me give you guys a few things that went through my head as I was prepping this. The first thing is I almost shied away from this, but then decided to take it on as a challenge because of the fact that I know there are people within our group that do not like the mixing of fantasy and sci-fi.
Blah!
And I intentionally decided to take this one for that reason, to see if I could make a pitch that would sell past that objection. Because, for example, in the last episode, we talked about the clans as being a non-starting idea. And so I wanted to take kind of a non-starter idea. Hmm. Now, in terms of the pitch of what you guys are doing, Pat, it's a fascinating question. But let me tell you something that's really unusual. This is one of the very, very, very few games where what I'm interested in is the setting and not the narrative.
Yeah.
Right. Everything else I pitched to you guys, if it was Epoch Rhizos, if it was Battletech.
We're going to be playing a military-style campaign, and you're going to be on a warship.
Precisely.
Or, you know, we're
this is
be,
one of the few set things where I am more fascinated by the setting than by the narrative. And let me tell you guys something else about this in terms of backstory. This is actually a pretty old setting of mine that I don't think anyone here, including Chad, is familiar with. I actually created it back in the early 2000s. And when I was doing serial fiction for a couple different websites, I was writing two stories, one of which was set in Epoch Rhizos, the other which was set in this setting. Mm-hmm. And so I have actually a really developed setting. I actually have whole notebooks filled with what the academies are and how they discern themselves and what the different schools within the academies are and how they interact with each other. And there's this whole politic where a lot of the academies get along, but a lot of them hate each other. But there are certain rules to where you can't be the first one to make a move, because if you do, you have just basically made yourself open game for everybody to dive on you. So there's all this politicking and backstabbing and maneuvering, because the academies want to undermine each other, but they can't do it too openly, because if they do it openly, they've made themselves fair game for everybody else. And that's not all the settings of. There's, you know, there's governments and politics and war and whatnot that have nothing to do with magic. Mm-hmm. If you play this game as someone who's in powered armor with a pulse rifle, you have a place in this universe. You are not just a tag along to the mage.
Let me ask you one question in regards to the setting, because this is one thing that actually really kind of stuck out for me. You said that the galaxy as a whole, if it's inhabitable, there's people there. Is there no frontier? Is there no edge? So in other words, what can be settled has been settled.
That is not entirely true. What I would say is that the galaxy being such a vast place, the low-hanging fruit got taken first. So if you basically lay in a course for a star system and we presuppose there's a usable planet in that star system, chances are there will be somebody there, but it is not a guarantee because some systems are more inhabitable than others. Some planets are more inhabitable than others. And therefore, there is a frontier, but the frontier is not per se a directionality. It's a type. The frontier is not that, well, here's Earth and the farther you get from Earth, you've hit a frontier. It's more like the weirder the place is, the closer you get to the galactic core. If you go into a system where there's nothing but two super hot gas giants or whatever, these are the places that are the frontier. In fact, actually, in addition to being disconnected from the calendar, this setting is so disconnected from humanity, they actually don't even remember what their homeworld is. Earth is one of a few competing theories on where humanity came from.
Oh, so Earth is no longer inhabited?
No, Earth is inhabited, but it's kind of like
where it is.
Well, they know where it is, but think of it this way. Like today, we have
been away from it so long.
Exactly. Like, think of it this way. We have competing theories today on where humanity started. Was it out of Europe, out of Africa? What was the first civilization? Was it something in like India or was it Mesopotamia? In the same way, nobody remembers.
Right.
Earth is a planet.
So far.
Exactly. Away. It is so disconnected from what we think of. And that's something that I want to create in the player's mind, is a sense of disconnect. I can't give you a clean line from World War II to where we are at this point in history. Mm-hmm. It has become so muddled that, sure, Earth has a claim to being where humanity started, but so do half a dozen other star systems. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of theories and evidences about why each of these might have been the first. And nobody's really sure. So what once again, with this pitch, what is your guys' take? Would you play this game? Would you not play this game? What did I sell right? What did I fail on?
I enjoy the setting, don't get me wrong, but I almost feel like I personally need an idea of what we'll be doing so that I can come to the table with a character concept.
Yeah.
And then go from there. Because if you just give me all setting and I don't know what our goals are. Like, if you if you want us to be like running,
let me add a pitch then. At least one of you is from the academies. I don't care if it's one of you or all of you or whatever. At least one of you is from the academy. You are being paired with other experts from a variety of fields, and we can do that either by shopping the academies or picking up people who are outside the academies, whatever. Word has come in that people from both governments and the academies want to keep on the down low, that they have found ruins that they're pretty sure are not human in origin. This is the first serious hint that there might be something other than humanity anywhere in the galaxy.
Now I'm down.
I like that.
We want you to investigate. We don't know what it is. It may be
human. We're not saying it's aliens.
We're not saying it's aliens. I'm not saying it's aliens.
Yeah, I would play that. If you gave me that, if you gave me a reason for wanting to play in this setting, a conflict or even a goal,
right.
I'm in. That's a cool setting. I enjoy it. I would love to play it.
It was a good pitch. I'm not going to say I would play it or I wouldn't play it because I have to hear the other pitches first.
I was just about to say, I think what I would like to
at this
point
is...
On its own, I would probably pay it. Now that you've added that additional element in there about what it is, at least I have an indication as to what it is we might be doing. Now I'd be down with it.
If there was no competition for ideas, yeah, I would play this. I would probably have like one or two other questions to ask.
Yeah.
But as far as the pitch goes, I would play it. That's a good pitch. Yeah. A good setting, good okay. system, intriguing, interesting. But in the competition of ideas, Chris totally choked on his own vomit there. So he's out, but then I need to listen to the others to see if...
Oh, yeah. Stop picking on him. I feel so bad. Yeah.
No, Chris wins hands down as the most picked on host on this show.
Yeah. I know, and please. I feel so bad about it. So I'm not going to join in on
I'm
this picking
not
on.
Picking on Chris. I'm just picking on his terrible, terrible ideas.
That's right. See, at least Chad has the courtesy to make the distinction. Is that yes. I don't hate you. I just hate
I just hate all the attributes of Chris.
I hate everything you do and say and present. Like, and stand for. But you as a person, you're not bad.
Yeah. Oh, great. I don't hate chocolate cake. I just hate milk and flour and eggs, sugar and chocolate.
Yeah. I like you. I just wish that you were never born.
All right. But all right. Back to this. Okay. So, Julia, let's hear your right. pitch.
I want to run a campaign in the Shadowrun setting. And
damn it! You took my idea.
Did I really?
No.
I know, I'm just kidding. I know you hate
that.
It. I'm just totally kidding.
I really highly doubt that.
We're going to run in the Shadowrun setting, and we're going to follow
so
it.
So at this point, Chad's going to pick his own game.
Yeah, he's
going
to pick his own game.
No. No. I will, as much as I down, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it's fine.
No, he's not.
No, I'm not. at all.
He's not.
As much as I down on Shadowrun, I have played in some really good Shadowrun games.
Yeah, it depends on the GM.
A good GM can make a crap setting and system like Shadowrun shine.
Exactly.
All right, so Julie, go ahead.
So Shadowrun.
It's a Shadowrun game.
We're going to follow the fluff pretty closely. We're going to limit magic, so it's going to be a low magic setting. But the whole goal for you guys is to rebel against the corporations one by one. You're going to be a special ops unit. You have no clue who's running this unit. You're just being hired. You have no clue who each other are. And all you're doing is taking down each corporation one at a time, so however you feel necessary.
Ares, Az Technology, Mitsubishi, whatever the heck.
All of them.
All of them, one by one. Which is interesting, because for anyone listening to this or on the mics who's not deeply familiar with Shadowrun, the gist of Shadowrun is that you're in a very postmodern world. Governments have extremely limited power.
Almost none.
And pretty much everything has been doled out to corporations.
Well, I mean, they've even divided up the world in itself.
Precisely.
With
where the police force is not...
It's not county police. No, it's
Lone
corporation.
Star.
Yeah.
It's a corporation.
It's corporation.
The military is mostly run by the Ares Corporation. The government is really a puppet of the corporations who have so much power and so much influence. It draws very heavily from a lot of the cyberpunk and postmodern ideas that came from like 80s sci-fi books. And so it just kind of continued and ran with those.
Well, that's fascinating, Dan.
Well, I was just trying to explain
what that means.
The significance of her setting.
But you're not helping her run the game.
Well, no, it's fine. This is how we get together and talk about games anyway.
Right. To the best of my knowledge, Pat's never played Shadowrun.
Yeah. That is correct. Yeah.
So I had to explain to him what this means to take down corporations.
Yeah, you're going
to
take down corporations one at a time. And I don't want everybody to be gun-toting crazies. I want a face. I want different things. I want you guys to figure out creative ways to take down these corporations.
Can I be a spellcaster? Even though it's low magic?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's just low magic. And by that, I just mean more packed magic instead of like, oh, mystical stuff. You know, it's more packed kind of stuff, which is what Shadowrun has. But people do, and actually me and Chad were talking about this on the way down, there are dragons in the setting. And you can easily throw pretty crazy magic stuff in here if you wanted to. I don't want to do that. I wanted to keep it pretty base.
Let me ask you this. Are you removing the high magic aspect from the game, or are you just, what we are doing just isn't dealing with that part of the
set? Exactly.
Setting. Okay.
But you could a caster, especially, like I said, I would prefer you to be more of a packed magic person in my game, just because the magic in Shadowrun can get a little crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I would allow somebody to be a technomancer, but I hate running the technomancer. I really do hate the Matrix, but I'll do it.
Sure. I don't really have any questions. That was a good pitch.
That was a pretty good pitch. So just to give the background, we're not necessarily Shadowrunners out looking for our next job. Somebody is giving us a series of jobs from one to one to one to one. Is that exactly?
It's kind of being voluntold, if it's coming from a military aspect. You're being voluntold to do this. You're not really necessarily Shadowrunners to begin with. You could be. One of you guys could be, definitely. But you just all of a sudden are told, hey, you're going to be in a special ops. Have fun. You know, kind of thing.
The only questions I think I would have with this, and this would probably have to be like some sort of, you know, back and forth private conversation, as far as, you know, being special ops, I must have obviously gone through some sort of screening process or something to get hired. So I would want to know, how much flexibility do I have so I can make a damaged character in one way or another so that some of those issues can be explored? There's got to be elements in my past that I'm going to want to at some point be able to deal with over the arc of the campaign, even though we're doing these missions.
Oh, yeah, I would definitely throw it in. It would be, I mean, it's really easy to link a lot of anybody's past into corporations because they are so large in Shadowrun. So it'd be easy to take anybody's personal stuff and throw it in.
One and only question you've already answered, which is, what did you mean by reducing the magic, which you've already explained. Beyond that, I gotta say, I like the pitch, and here's why. First and foremost, I like an underdog story, and what you have created is an underdog story about basically revolutionaries throwing off the shackles of a regime that has no right being there in the first place. You know, corporations were never asked to take this power. They just kind of took it.
They took it, yeah.
In fact, probably the character that I would play in this game, I've already had a character forming in my head, which is a good sign. The character I would probably play would be a government guy. I would probably play like a CIA or FBI or something like that agent. You know, whether there's a contact that's hired him or this is simply what he believes ideologically, he's in this to basically restore power to the hands of the government, thereby the hands of the people. He wants to take it away from the corporations, and the only way to do that is one by one, bring all the mega corporations down and shatter them into smaller corporations. This is like the antitrust wars against the, you know, the quote unquote robber barons of the late 19th, early 20th century. And that's, I think, how my character would see it. But I don't have a huge critique on this. I had one question, which you've answered. Beyond that, I like the pitch. I like the idea.
Yeah, I'd be totally down with it just from the sheer fact that it's Shadowrun. I've been kind of jonesing to play Shadowrun again, so.
I think the biggest difficulty here is we'd have to be careful in the group template, because once it becomes more clear, which it probably, I assume it would over time, who wants this and why, we'd have to be sure there's something beyond just the objective that binds us together, so that if, let's say, it turns out that, I don't know, it's not the government, it's a cabal of dragons or something like that, which is just as evil as the corporations, that we're not going to suddenly fracture as a group and run our separate ways. But I think if the group template was done right, to where we had really deep and abiding relationships, that game has a lot of potential.
The pitch was short, sweet, to the point. You covered setting, you covered genre, you covered system, you covered generally what the players are going to be doing without dictating to the players what they are, which is good and easy to do in Shadowrun. I mean, play Shadowrunners, it says it on the tin.
Exactly.
You know, I like the pitch because it was short and sweet, to the point, gave all the pertinent information, and had just enough punch in it. If I were to give any critique to it, and I, mind you, I have to look for critique in this because there really isn't much to critique on, I would fit into the pitch a little bit more conspiracy.
Okay.
Just to make people
think about it.
Well, what does that mean?
Because, yeah, obviously, you know, one of the big questions to me, but I think Chad's right in that I, for lack of a better phrase, I eisegeted this instead of exegeted this.
Yeah.
I read this in. I didn't read this out. Who wants this and why?
Yeah.
And I want that to be a mystery.
And that's a mystery.
Because, is it the Native Americans? Is it the Elvish? Is
it could even
dragons?
Be another corporation.
Is it the government? Is it a corporation? Is it just some psycho dude who's got billions and billions and billions of new yen and just wants to see the world burn?
In a short, sweet pitch like you did, you want to throw in just a little bit more of a hook, a little bit more of a mystery just to hook them in and to get them wondering, because then you do that and then they start asking the questions like Dan did. You know,
yeah.
It's like, well, what? And then you go, in the example we used in the last episode with the salesmanship, you hand the customer the product, then you take it away.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what you're doing. You're handing them, they're like, well, what's going on here? And then you're like, well,
You'll find out.
You have to play. No, it was good. It was good.
Yeah.
But again, I have not decided yet what I would want to play, where I would cast my vote.
And I think, you know, a great way to do what Chad's talking about is you could say something like, your previous run, this is just one example. It's not the only way you do it, but just as an example. In your previous run, Ares hired you to humiliate and take down a small security firm. Now suddenly that same contact in Shadowrun parlance of Mr. Johnson has called you and has named your next target Ares.
Oh, wow. That's a good one.
And now it's kind of like, yeah, huh?
Yeah.
Now it's like, okay, this is getting more crooked. Pat, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think with that said, let's hear Chad's pitch.
So I've got two pitches. One of them is a sort of fakey pitch to do an example of something. And the one is my real pitch. So I'll start off with my fakey pitch. I look at Julia. Dresden, you in?
Yes.
Boom. Pat, you in for anything that sounds interesting?
Yes.
Boom. In. Dan, I'm running a completely serious take of Shadowrun. No joke. You in?
Yeah.
Boom.
We were just talking about that, actually.
And those are fakey pitches, but my example is know your audience. Know what they want, what they're interested in. And if your interests line up with that, then you can pitch to that.
You missed one.
And then they're already in. Chris, do you want to run an old school dungeon crawl module? I mean, we're going to blow the dust off of this baby. This is something I found in a garage sale.
I think hear your fake. Let's hear your fake.
That was my fake.
I love it.
But that's totally true. If you know what the people who you play with likes, then it's easy. I mean, our friends are like that, especially.
Chris, I am running. Dan handed me a module. I am running Dungeon Module A4 in the Dungeon of the Slave Lords. And this guy's beating a mushroom to death. You in?
Oh, I'm in.
We'll bring Guinness.
Look at that. The mushroom is like right there.
Actually, you know what?
There's white stuff coming out.
Let me tell you something. I played that module. However.
Oh, I feel like a baby.
Well, that's been a good 6.5 year run.
Here's why I would say yes, Chad, is because you would be running it. So I know that that's whatever is in there is merely a guideline for you, and that you would take the seeds that are in there. There's some decent seeds in there, and then you would run with it in a direction that it had not been run with.
Spores,
and,
you mean? There are some decent
spores. Spores. I'm sorry.
Spores, mold, and fungi.
And it'd be great.
I think I discussed them on my hands.
Is that a roper?
Yes, it's a roper. Oh, I'm totally playing this one.
Pat found his family tree.
That's right. If the roper is killed. Oh, my God. If the roper is killed, it will immediately go limp.
For the first time in its...
I'd run that, but I feel
dirty. And that is the only way that will happen, folks. Good night. See you next week.
Okay, so...
All right, so what is your real pitch?
My real pitch is, and obviously inspired by what we did on Friday, how'd you guys feel about running a pirate campaign where you guys are a pirate crew and you can fill any of the different roles all the way from the captain to the lowest, whoever mans the sump pump at the bottom of the ship, anywhere in between, officer, mate, whatever you want to run. And what we're going to do is we're going to run it in the diaspora system, hard sci-fi system, but we're going to adapt it.
Okay.
It's fate-based aspects, all that sort of stuff. Pat went through this on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And what we're going to do is we're going to run the ships as if in the rule system, we're going to run them like they're spaceships, but we're really running sailing ships. Everything is going to be changed. We're going to do crew. We're going to do the ship. We're going to do characters. All of it based on fate. And it's going to be like in Dresden, where you know how you design a city and you come up with all the characters in the city.
Right.
Well, we're going to come up with the ship. And all the characters of the ship and all the aspects of the ship. And you are going to crew the ship. Then we're also going to come up with like maybe a pirate port. And then we're going to come up with interesting places. We're going to come up with interesting characters, interesting things that are going on, different factions that are kind of fighting with each other and stuff. And then I'm also thinking that we can put just an air of not so much magic, but that sort of magic mystery into it. Sort of, I don't want to say Cthulhu-esque because that puts too much, you know.
The world's an unknown place.
The world is an unknown place. And, you know, on the maps, they say here be dragons. Well, it's not dragons, they're but it is something.
Giant lizards.
Right.
And there's going to be high seas piracy. There's going to be debauchery. There's going to be high adventure. We're going to swash mini buckles. There will be a lot going on in this. And it isn't going to be just a normal pirates and we're going to plunder booty and stuff.
Except you just for lost Pat.
Yeah, Pat's gone. He just
I'm barely hanging on at that after that one. Yeah.
But Pat, there will be plenty of booty to be had.
Okay, I'm so back in.
There'll be intrigues and stuff because I want to add historical aspects to it, too. I want to add the British, the Spanish, the French. It's going to be taking place in the Caribbean. It's going to have all these factions. It's going to have all these characters. I want to run a grand adventure, a high seas adventure. I think the salesmanship on that was a little off.
Well, let me tell you what I liked and let me tell you what my concern is. And actually, my concern has nothing to do with your pitch. Mm-hmm. It has more to do with experience. What I like about it is if we exclude this past Friday.
Right.
In my gaming career, I have played just about every genre you can imagine. The one thing that I have never played, once again, barring last Friday, is a high seas adventure game. Mm-hmm. I have never played something from the golden age of sail, mm-hmm. 1600s, 1700s, specifically set aboard a masted ship, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. Never done it. But I love that stuff. I love that era of history. I love the maritime aspect. There's all kinds of stuff there that I love. Really enjoyed the Sea Dogs series before it got renamed. There were actually multiple Sea Dogs games for anyone that didn't know that. They just got renamed. But I really like that stuff. And so that right there, you've got me sold. My concern, and this is not one that has anything to do with your pitch, but this is one that I would toss back to you as the game master, is in our most recent Dresden game, I really felt like at the end of the day, my character was an afterthought. My character was kind of a hang-on. I wasn't deeply integrated to the setting. And while that may or may not happen to me, it could happen to anyone. I would want to know what controls we have in place to make sure that as we're putting together the setting in good Dresden-esque fashion, that we are making sure that everyone is integrated with the setting, everyone is integrated with each other, and it is always done so in an equal way.
The character creation process, especially in Diaspora, is completely collaborative. You cannot make a character in a vacuum. And it is built in the rules that you have to choose aspects.
Yeah, that's theoretically the case in Dresden, and I still ended up as a
child. But you didn't make your character collaborative.
And
your character. I'm not saying. Your character was made in a vacuum.
Right.
That's why it was separate.
With the fate system, you just can't. You can't make. It's really hard to bring characters into a setting.
That was
going to
be my question. So this is going to be a game where you're playing with who you've got.
Right.
At the moment. Mm-hmm. And woe be unto you if you lose one or gain one.
A few sessions in or something like that.
That's just not going to work.
I think if somebody comes in late, they can be integrated. Here's what happens in a traditional game. Not Fate. Any game you want.
Right.
Any game you want. Somebody comes in midstream. What happens is they show up to the session. They sit there and listen to what's going on while they're making a character. And when the game master gets a chance, they nudge them and say, hey, is this good? While the game master's running a game and everyone's playing. What would have to happen in a game, Dresden, Diaspora, right. Sphere of the Century, anything you want to name, where they have a collaborative world-building aspect to it, play stops. The person comes in. That character is made collaboratively.
And
everybody gets an extra aspect. That aspect is tied to the character. Player
and that's what we did in my Dresden game.
Make, say we're playing Dresden, we'll have the city. Or in this pirate game, you would get to name aspects of the ship. You would get to create NPCs for the ship that we just didn't notice before. But they're there. Or maybe that even came with you. Maybe you're coming aboard. Whatever the hook is to get you in.
Where I want to say that while it would be a concern of mine, it would not be a game stopper, nor does it really affect your sales pitch. I don't want to linger on this too long because I actually think there may be a good show topic in terms of where we went wrong with Dresden and what would have made it right. And I think that applies more generally to group templates as a whole. It's just Dresden has something group template-ish as a built-in game mechanic. But so we'll come back to that in a future episode. So let me move past that and just say the sales pitch, I have nothing negative to say about. I think I have some additional questions, but there was nothing about what you presented that I object to or have a problem with or would make me stop and say no.
I think my pitch was a little weak.
Why?
I agree with you, Chad. I think it was a little weak, but not unsuccessful. I think the weakness came in how you laid things out. There was a little bit of lack of enthusiasm in your voice that didn't match the genre that you're pitching.
I'm running on maybe 4 or 5 hours of sleep. Thank you, Borderlands 2.
Borderlands 2 dropped last night.
Well, and actually, I was going to say that I think that that is one of the most important things about game pitching is the GM who's going to be running it being really enthusiastic.
Having the enthusiasm.
If you're pitching something and you're like, oh, I just want to run this game and it's, I just feel like I wouldn't be as interested in it. But I'm not saying that you didn't sound that bad about it.
I didn't. I don't think that I knocked it out of the park by any stretch of the imagination.
But at the very least, you got a triple. And quite honestly, I'm sold on it. My questions and concerns are very similar to Dan's. I would want to know more, and this might occur within the character creation process, but I would want to know more about who are we running from, who do we really hate, those kinds of things, so I can have a bit more grounded sense of reality as to who we might be dealing
and
with.
And as soon as you ask that question, I would say we're going to add in another aspect, of this fate system. You guys are going to design, collaboratively build your nemesis. This isn't going to be the big bad. Could be the big bad. But they will be your nemesis. Maybe a pirate ship that is out there that you're competing against.
I mean, in Pirates of the Caribbean, as of this was the second or third movie, the guy that was the bad guy in the first movie
ended up being a friend.
Ended up being their ally. Now he was still kind of an antagonist of sorts.
He's still a pirate.
Yeah, he's still a pirate. So he's an antagonist of sorts, but he was not the main bad guy, and he ended up being part of their team.
I think that would be really cool. I have not played a game yet. With all the collaborative world-building stuff we have done... we've gotten to build the bad guy. And I think a pirate game would be perfect for that.
I agree with you. Pirate games and superhero games are both awesome for that.
Yes.
My question would just be, I love pirate anything. You can probably ask my gaming group. I've played 3 in many different settings. But my question would be, how long would you plan on running this? Because sometimes some pirate stuff can get really boring after a while. That's all you're doing.
Or repetitive,
Yeah, very repetitive. So my question would be, how would you be able to diversify it and make it more...
And if I had run a little bit better of a pitch, something that I was trying to communicate and failed to do so was that I wanted the game to be about more than plundering and getting treasure. It's about more than boarding a ship and taking their crew and their treasure holds and then taking a prize ship and that sort of thing. I want that to be in there.
Right.
But I don't want that to be the game.
What is the more? Can you give me a few examples of what more would be?
Well, I think that there could be an ancient evil out there. I would want to start exploring that a bit. I think that there could be a political situation. You have legitimate governments that are vying against each other, yet all of them are against the pirates, yet all of them are not against the pirates. I mean, what's the difference between a pirate and a privateer?
A mark.
A piece of paper.
Yeah,
you know?
A mark.
And I think that a lot of that would come out in the collaboration and how you guys build your characters. Maybe your characters are motivated to earn their letters of mark. Maybe they're not. Maybe you guys did have letters of mark and then you tore them up for whatever reason. But what is the more that's going on?
Right.
I think that...
And I'll tell you from experience as someone who's run the merchant game before, you definitely need to make sure the characters care as a group. Not each character cares about something other than money and it's all different. Mm-hmm. They as a team care about overlapping things and goals that have nothing to do with profit and loss.
Right. Well, and I think that that's where a lot of the collaboration would not solve that, but it would help it because of the buy-in. You know, your characters would get a lot of buy-in to what they're doing. So they make this area, this pirate society or whatever, and they start to care about it. And they want to do more than just be pirates in it. If you don't do anything, they are just pirates in this collaborative world they made. When you start applying specific pressure against that, not them, but that world... Mm-hmm. Then they start rebelling against that pressure.
Right.
And then they start going after that pressure. And then you could start adding intricacy into the pressure instead of just making it generic evil. Then you start making an intricate maze that they go into. And then you start, there's your plot. You have a plot.
Well, and one thing about anything pirate is that people, since Pirates of the Caribbean came out, that's just all they see is like Captain Jack Sparrow. That is a pirate. And not all pirates were like that. You just have to get past the
norm.
Some
are French women with pepions.
Even historically, I mean, some of them were very well educated. Mm-hmm. Some of them were actually highly democratic in terms of how the ships were run. The idea of the one leg, eye patched, just absolute monster of a human being really is not. I'm not saying that sort of person didn't exist.
It just made up a small percentage.
But the point is that Treasure Island, I think more than anything, has informed our view of piracy. And that really isn't what a lot of those pirates were like. But without torturing the pirate thing.
I think I learned something from giving this pitch.
What's that?
Get some sleep. Start thinking of the idea earlier in the day instead of later in the day.
I've actually been working on mine since we recorded the last episode.
I think I would have done a much better pitch on 8 hours of sleep and if I would have started thinking about it this morning instead of like 10 minutes ago.
Well, and I think what I also learned was it's interesting because usually what I pitch is the narrative. And this time I did the reverse approach. Mm-hmm. And what the response was, give us a little bit of narrative.
Right.
And
so, it's a balance. Yeah, it's a balance and everything. Balance.
Well, I think part of that, too, I think part of that really comes from what the players have come to expect of the GMs as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah,
that is kind of what I expect from you.
Yeah. Well,
I like what you did. But at the same time, I just wanted a little bit of an idea. That being said, I didn't want it to be rammed down my throat. This is what you're going to do. But yeah.
Or on the other hand, you can look at it like this. You didn't give them the narrative, and if they wouldn't have asked for it, means they didn't care.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
You know, if I didn't care, I'd be like, oh, that's an interesting setting, Dan. Yeah, next.
I know for me, but I was mining just for a little bit more information on to try to, like you said, trying to formulate an idea of a character in my head.
And remember in the last episode, too, we talked about how there's A, B, and C of what you cannot change, you will not change, that you need that for you to run it,
right,
for you to be happy. But there's X, Y, Z that you have a lot of wiggle room on. And then you take your X, Y, and Z, and then you pitch your setting and how you pitched it, and then you listen to what the questions they're asking. Not what your answers are to them, but who's asking what questions identifies what those individuals want out of the game. So now you can take your XYZ wiggle ideas, and you can start wiggling them towards those ideas and those questions,
right,
and make that sort of setting more how they want. Because Pat likes booty, and he likes wiggling. So you get those two things in a game, he's sold.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there is a completely separate topic we did not get to this episode. So next episode, I think we're going to come back to where I think we went wrong with collaborative development in the Dresden game and talk a little bit about that. And then Julia's got some things she wants to talk about. So that's what we come back to next time. In the meantime, as always, you guys have a great week and keep up those great games. And we will catch you guys at the same time next week.
But I never told you which one I was going to choose.
All right, fine, Pat. Which one would you have chosen?
Yeah.
I'll look right at time.
What an
asshole. Yeah.
See ya. Yeah. This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2012. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.